Good morning, everybody. There is a simon in Yeridaya, Chelakala, simon Pedalet, all about toloim, all about bugs. It's all based on Pesukim in the Chumash. The Gemara has a prohibition from Sheretz Hamayim, Sheretz Ha'aretz, and Sheretz Ha'of. Sheretz Ha'of means anything that flies that's not kosher. So the Torah gives us a list of the non-kosher birds. And then the Mishnah in Chulin explains what do they all have in common. How do you determine whether any given bird is kosher or non-kosher? So the Mishnah in the Gemara is a famous sugya of Nesher. It's a question what the word Nesher means. Usually you assume Nesher is an eagle. So Tosis has a long Tosis in Chulin, Eletrefix. The Rabbi Natan thinks Nesher is not an eagle. But that's known as the sugya of Nesher. There's a long complicated Balamor over there. But there's a way to determine whether any given bird is kosher or non-kosher. Any bird that flies that's not kosher, that doesn't correspond to the Zimanim, is called the Sheretz Ha'of. Then we have rules and regulations how to determine whether any given animal is kosher or non-kosher. It has to be Malagir, Mafis Parsa. It has to chew a scud and have split hoofs. Easy enough. So anything that crawls on the ground that's not Malagir, Mafis Parsa is called Sheretz Ha'aretz. No matter whether it's an elephant or a horse or it's a little ant, a little bug, that's all called Sheretz Ha'aretz. That's a question. Maybe the big animals are not called sheretz. Maybe only tiny little things that crawl are called sheretz. That's a discussion in Tosfos. And then the Sheretz Hamayim, we have rules and regulations how to determine which fish are kosher, which fish are not kosher. Chumash says you have to have snap of the kaskesis. You have to have fins and scales. So anything that swims in the water that doesn't have fins and scales is not kosher. And that's called the Sheretz Hamayim. The Rambam has an interpretation in the Gemara in Sochem and Makkos that sometimes you can label one animal as all three, Sheretz Ha'aretz and Sheretz Hamayim and Sheretz Ha'of. It swims and it flies and it crawls on the ground. The Rabbi thinks that that doesn't make any sense, even if it does all three, but biologically it belongs to one category or other. It's not a bird, a plane, and a Superman. It's either a fish or it crawls on the ground. It should belong under one category. It shouldn't belong under all three categories. So that's a machlokes, the Rambam and the Rambam. But there is a din of the psukim and chumash, that Sheretz Ha'aretz is us. Bugs are us, even if it's not royal achilo. Usually we have a rule that non-kosher food, nevela or trefa, nevela means an animal that never had a proper shlita. All the meat in the A&P is nevela. And then you have trefa. Sometimes the shochet did do a proper shchita, perfect shchita, but then the animal happens to be diseased. Sometimes you can tell on the outside. Sometimes you can't tell till after you shecht it. Then you check on the inside. So if the animal is diseased, that's called the trefa. The shchita was perfect. It's not a nevela. It's not tome. A nevela has an isa nevela. You're not allowed to eat it, and it has tumas nevela. Trefa. If you shecht the trefa, it doesn't have tumah, but it has an isa trefa. So we have a rule that nevela she'ena ruya lager, ena kruya nevela. If the nevela meat is not fit for human consumption, then atar it's mutter to eat. Because the pasuk says, what do you do with nevela? It says in the Chumash, you sell it to a non-Jew, or give it to a ger tosha. The ger tosha means a non-Jew who accepted upon himself to observe the sheva mitzvahs b'nerach. A non-Jew. There's a plain non-Jew and a non-Jew who accepted sheva mitzvahs b'nerach. So a non-Jew is a nochri, and the one who accepted sheva mitzvahs b'nerach is called a ger tosha. So the Pasuk says, what do you do with Nevela? You should sell it to the non-Jew. So the Gemara says, Nevela ha-ruy la-ger, kruy Nevela. Nevela she'ni ruy la-ger, if it's not fit for human consumption, is mutam in ha-Torah. It's a machloik, it's whether it's awesome in the Rabbanon. We pass them in the Rabbanon, it's awesome. Because if you sit and eat this whole steak that's boiled, that's nifsam achilo, so you are demonstrating that subjectively, as far as you're concerned, it is royal achilo. Baharai, I'm sitting and I'm eating the whole steak. So that's midirabban, but minatora, whenever you have non-kosher food that nips on the achila sodom, it's not fit for human consumption, it's mutter. But as far as these flies are concerned, flies and the bugs and the ants and the gnats and so on, in most countries they don't eat them. So it's, strictly speaking, should be nips on the achila sodom. But nonetheless, the Torah says that it's prohibited, despite the fact that it's not royal achila. That's exactly the chiddush of the Torah. All day long, we know that we swallow microorganisms, millions and billions of microorganisms. So why don't we say that we're eating non-kosher sheretz, ha'of? So the answer is that they're invisible. It's microscopic. The Torah only prohibits a sheretz that's nira la'ayin, that's visible. If it's not visible, the Torah never prohibited that. Moshe Feinstein writes in a tshuva about to determine whether a woman is a nida or not. Let's say a woman has a red stain on her clothing, and it's a question what color it is, how red is it? So the Gemara has rules and regulations how red the mara has to be that it should make the woman into a nida. If the fluid that comes out from her body is not red, so it doesn't have the din of dam. Dam hayorek. If it's brown or yellow, it doesn't have a din of dam, and it's not metama, the woman is a nida. So some rabbanim will take a magnifying glass when they'll look at a mara. It, to the naked eye, it doesn't appear to be red, but they'll use a magnifying glass, and then under the magnifying glass, it'll look red. So Moshe Feinstein says that that's not proper. That the din depends on kefira osayin. The way if a person is half blind, it doesn't help. It means a person who has normal sight should be able to see that it has a maratomi. All the dinim in the Torah depend on kefira osayin. I remember once a dentist came to me and he showed me after davening, he showed me his tefillin, and he wants to know, is it square? The din is that the tefillin have to be square. So I looked at it and I took out a piece of paper from my pocket and I started measuring this side, that side. I said, yeah, it's square. So he tells me it's not square. It bothers him. He says he knows his tefillin are not square. Why? He's a dentist, and he takes care of fillings that are so tiny, so his eyes became like a precision instrument. And when he looks at something, he can tell right away if it's a square or not. So he can tell right away that his tefillin are obviously not square. So I said, but to me it is square. To a normal eyesight, it is square. If you have better than 20/20 vision, you're like a precision instrument. You have the right to ignore that. So Rav Moshe Feinstein writes that the ribu on the tefillin and the mara hadam of the dam anido and the shrotzim, the toloim, all depends, is it visible to the naked eye, to the normal eyesight. Some people, they'll take a bowl of soup and they won't look when they're eating. They say, whatever you don't see is kosher. That's ridiculous. If there are bugs in the soup, if you look, you'll see the bugs. So just because you close your eyes, that's not a heta. It means if the bugs are not visible, if they're so tiny that they're not visible to the naked eye, then the din is that it's muta. Tosfos in Erev and on Daf Chof Ches quotes a Rashi and discusses the Rashi. They agree with him that the word sheretz comes from the word sheretz, that it runs. Sometimes, I remember someone once showed me a leaf of some cabbage, and he asked me, do I see any bugs? So I looked and I looked and I looked and I said, there are no bugs. Don't make me crazy. There are no bugs here. So he says, wrong. So he puts the cabbage on his hand, and the warmth of his hand warmed up the bug. And then I see that there was a black spot that starts to move. Just looking at the black spot on the table, it didn't look like a bug. But then when it started to move, so obviously, he still can't tell that it's a bug, but it's moving. So obviously it's not a piece of dirt, it's a bug. So Tosfos quotes Rashi, that the word sheretz means even if you look at the bug, it doesn't seem, unless you use a magnifying glass, you won't see the legs and the eyes and the wings and so on, you won't see anything. It just looks like a black spot. But if it starts to walk and you can see when it's misnaneya, you can see that it's moving, so obviously it's a sheretz, so then it's us. That's exactly what it means, sheretz. Or in Shulchan Aruch, the Darkei Tshuva, Simen Pei Dalet, Darkei Tshuva is a likut of all of the later achronim on the Shulchan Aruch that was put together by the Minkach Ruf. He had a whole project. He had all the boys in the yeshiva. He assigned this page to one chavrusa and this page to the other chavrusa and this page to the next chavrusa, and they should go research and look at all the svarim and put together what everybody says. So that's why on some sifim it's much better than others, because the work was done by many different people. And then you have a lot of times repeats. Every 20 pages they'll repeat the same thing, and that'll give you a cross-reference. Look what I wrote over there, look right over here, because all the work was done by many different people. So that's useful. It was done before the First World War, in the early 1900s. So then the Darkei Tshuva has a likut of all of the Achronim. San Simen Pei Dalet, he quotes the Achronim who say, let's say you have bugs in water, and when the bugs are alive, you can see them swimming around. And it doesn't look like the wind is blowing the water. It looks like when someone once showed me, someone took water from the Newark Reservoir, and they took it in a bucket, and they brought it to the yeshiva. So the bugs were still alive there. So it looked like a fish tank. with fish swimming around. You can't see the bug itself, but you can see that there's something there, a lot of things swimming around. So that's considered near a lion. So let's say I'll take that water. It's clear that it has bugs, and I'll take the water and I'll cook it, and all the bugs will be killed. So now you can't see the bugs. So the Darkei Tshuva course, Darkeinim, that doesn't make it mutter. Since the bugs were visible when they were alive, so that's considered a bug that is near a lion. There is a discussion. See, by the time the water comes to New York, is one of the three lucky winners in America where they don't filter the water. All big cities, I think from a population of 10,000 and above, not so big, all villages that have 10,000 and above inhabitants are required by law to filter the water, except for three cities in America. That's New York and Boston and in Seattle. So these are the three cities where they don't filter the water. They say they put in chemicals and everything is safe. So Lamaisa, the water is not filtered in New York, and the same bugs that were there in the reservoir appear when the water comes out of the tap, except after you have the water coming out of the tap, these bugs are not going to be able to swim around anymore, because the water rushes when it's in the pipes going from the reservoir to our home. The water is pushed with such a great force that all the bugs are killed without cooking them. They're killed by the bug. If you throw an animal against the wall, it's going to get killed. See, here the bugs are all killed because they're bumping into the pipes. The pipes don't go straight. You reach a point where the pipe turns. So the bugs are being thrown with such a force, and then they bump into the pipe over here when it starts to turn, so then they're all dead. So by the time we get the water, the bugs are not visible anymore. But originally, when they were in the, when the bugs were swimming in the reservoir, so they were visible. So if these bugs are usa, that's not called not near a lie. That's like cooking. If I know that I have water that has bugs that are swimming around, and it's only visible because of the fact sherutz, because it's moving, and then I cook it, and all the bugs are dead, and they're not visible anymore. So that's not considered in a near lie, because originally the bugs were visible. In the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, Rabbi Neuwirth quotes a discussion of what's the din if you have a bug that you can see it's black and it's not moving. It's not moving. If you use a magnifying glass, then you can see that it has antenna and wings and legs. Well, without a magnifying glass, you cannot identify that it's a bug, but it is visible to the naked eye as a black spot. Is that considered near a lion or not? So he quotes Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who was known for his common sense. Most of the famous psalms of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach are based on common sense, together with Gemara. Okay. So he got his common sense from the Gemara. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, what does it help that it's visible, but it looks like a black spot, it looks like a dot? It's only usur if the bug is near a lion that it's a bug, either because the black spot is moving, shirots, or because I can see with my eyes that it has the shape of a bug. But if it's a black spot that's not moving, and doesn't, you need a magnifying glass to identify that it's a bug, he thought that that's not considered near a lion. And then Reb Shlomo Zalman added on that I was told that in the home of the Chazon Ish, they would need it. So the question is, what does that mean? What does the last sentence mean? So the Pashtus is that he's, out of respect to the Chazon Ish, he's mentioning what he did, and he holds that it's wrong. So some of the recent Svarim say, no, Reb Shlomo Zalman meant to say that it's Asa, which is clearly not what he meant to say. Reb Shlomo Zalman held his opinion that it's Zichah Mutter, and he doesn't understand why in the home of the Chazon Ish they would be makpah not to eat such a bug. That's called not near a lion. The mice are the bugs that are available here in New York in the water, the copepods. There's a tshuva in the Maharam Shik. Maharam Shik was a student of the Chasam Sofer in the middle and the late 1800s. He was a prominent rabbi in Hungary. Has very nice tshuvas, very strong tshuvas. So the Maharam Shik. The Hungarians used to say jokingly that there were three rabbanim by the name of Moshe who lived at the same time. One wrote the Yismach Moshe, he was a Hasidic Rebbe, he has tshuvas also, Heshiv Moshe, the Moshe titled them. And one was the Chasam Sofer, a Moshe Sofer, and one was the Maharam Shik, a Moshe Shik. So they used to say jokingly that the Chasam Sofer had gelernt and geken. He learned and he knew halacha. And the Maharam Shik, they considered compared to the Chasam Sofer, gelernt and nishgeken. he learned a lot, but he didn't know the din. Many people appreciate the Mamshik much better than the Chacham Sofer. That's how the Hungarians used to say. The Mamshik had Galant and Nishgiken. And Yismach Moshe was a Chassidish Rebbe of Nishgalant and Giken. He didn't learn. He was busy with Chassidus and Kabbalah and all kinds of other things. He wrote the Yismach Moshe and Chumash. It's a famous Sefer. And despite the fact that he didn't learn so much, he knew all the dinim anyway. So that assessment is very questionable. Many appreciate those who learn in yeshivas enjoy the Maram Shik's Chuvas much better than the Chasam Sofer's Chuvas. Maram Shik is more yeshivish. Chasam Sofer is a lot of times arbitrary. It just gives an arbitrary sound. Anyway, so the Maram Shik has a very beautiful tshuva where he discusses filtering water on Shabbos and Yom Tov. There's a malacha borer, and the Mishnah says in Beit that a borer is not only prohibited on Shabbos, borer is one of the malachas that's forbidden on Yom Tov as well. You're not allowed to do brer on Yom Tov. Under certain circumstances, you are allowed to, but usually you're not allowed to. So the Maram Shik writes to someone who says that in his community, they have a lot of these copepods, they have a lot of these bugs in the water. So he writes to him, every body of water in the world has these bugs in them. The only thing is that sometimes they're very common. Sometimes it's a miyut tamotze that you'll find a bug. And most communities, it's a miyut chainamotze that you find a bug. So he says, if you're telling me that in your community it's a miyut tamotze, it's a common thing, very common, that you find the bugs, then the halacha requires that you have to check. You're not allowed to drink a cup of water unless you filter the water. He says, in my community, most communities in the world, it's a miyut chainamotze. What is that concept of miyut tamotze, miyut chainamotze? So that's based on a Ramban in the beginning of Chulin. Ramban has in the Chidushin, as well as in the Mochamas, on the bottom of the Rif. Rabbi Nizrachi Halevi wrote a whole attack against the Rif, a running commentary, Sefer Hamor, to attack the Rif on many different issues. So the Ramban comes to defend the Psokim of the Rif. So he writes the Mochamas Hashem. He doesn't always agree with the Rif, Halacha L'maaseh, but he says the Rif's Shita is not indefensible. So a lot of times he'll defend the Rif and he'll say, I personally don't agree with the Rif, but you can't demolish the Rif Shita, and he'll answer all the kashas against the Rif. So in the beginning of Chulin, there's a piece that appears both in the Chidushi HaRamban on Chulin as well as in the Mochamas on the bottom of the Rif, where he develops this whole theme of a miyut hamotze as opposed to a miyut chein hamotze. Min HaTorah, I have the right to go basaroy. So what does it mean? Let's say I go shopping and I buy a suit, and I know that 51% of the suits that are sold do not have sharpness. Or let's say I'll eat a vegetable, and 51% of the vegetables do not have bugs. Sometimes it's not true, but let's say 51% of the vegetables. I'll drink a cup of water, 51% of the water that you drink does not have bugs in it. Or 51% of the time that you're drinking water, you will not be swallowing a bug. So in the Torah, you have the right to follow Rov, whatever the probability is. Rov is probability. There's a professor in Eretz Yisrael who learned here in YU who developed the whole idea. He claims that the whole concept of probabilities is a very modern concept in the world of mathematics. In the days of the Talmud, it didn't exist. Things against all the Gemaras. The Gemara talks about probabilities. The Gemara assumes whenever there's a probability, that's called Rov. This professor thinks that in the days of the Gemara, in the days of the Tanakh, until 200 years ago, there was no such concept as probabilities. Everything was just the tarugas. I know that there are suits that have shatnas and suits that don't have shatnas, so I view it as if it's a tarugas, and those suits that have shatnas are batel beroiv. So that's why I can take any suit I want, because the osadika suits are batel beroiv. That doesn't seem at all to be what the Gemara... The Gemara talks about probability. The Gemara says a woman gets married and the couple goes to Medina Sayyam, and we don't know whether she had any children or not. We have no contact. We have no telephone. We have no mail delivery. So the Gemara says you have the right to assume a Rav Noshim is Sabbath for Yoldos, that the woman certainly had a baby. What is it? Are you talking about a Taruvis? It's not a Taruvis. He's saying the probability is that she probably had a baby. If they're married for 5 years, they probably had a baby. Because most women married for 5 years had a baby already. That's a problem. The Gemara has a lot of things that are based on probability, not based on tarugas. So the din is min haTorah, acharav lahatos, you have the right to follow the rov, even if it's a rov that just made it by the skin of its teeth. It's a rov of 51%. And with the Rabbanon, they introduce a chumr that whenever you have a miut hamatzui, it's a significant minority possibility. So then with the Rabbanon, you have to be baidik whenever that's possible. So what does that mean, for example? So the Ramban quotes a medrash, which is very fascinating, that runs as follows. Adam HaRishon was created on Friday, and he was commanded not to eat from the Eitz HaDaas. And the same day that he was commanded not to eat from the Eitz HaDaas, an hour later he violated that prohibition and he ate. So the Medrash has a chiddush. If he would have waited till Friday night, Lel Shabbos, he would have been permitted to eat from the Eitz HaDaas. How does Medrash know? I don't know. That's what it says in the Medrash. So then the Medrash says, Adam HaRishon, idiot, you couldn't have patience to wait an hour. The Jewish people plant the tree and they wait 3 years. It's Orla for 3 years. They wait 3 years. A woman, a Jewish woman, becomes a neder, a zava. She waits a whole week, or she waits more than a week before she goes to the mikveh. The Jewish people wait. So the Medrash has the expression, Mi gala ofer me'enecha Adam HaRishon. Who will dig out Adam HaRishon from his grave and remove the dust from his eyes, and he'll be able to see that the Jewish people have patience, that they wait. And the Medrash gives another mashal, that when we shech the behemah, we don't eat the flesh right away. We check to see if there are any sirchas on the lungs. So the Ramban says, but there are 70 different kinds of treifas. So why does the Medrash only single out that we check the sirchas on the lungs, and that is the common practice? When you shech the behemah, you don't check for other things. Unless you know that this animal fell down a flight of stairs, and then you have to be concerned. Maybe it broke some limbs in such a way, maybe got a concussion in the brain, maybe it became a trefer. But if, or let's say the animal is wobbling, it can't walk on its own four feet. So then you have to check, maybe the legs are broken or something. But if nothing happened, a normal animal, you don't have to check for the other 69 trefers. The only trefers we check for is sirchas on the lung, sirchas on the reya. Why is that so? So the Ramban explains, because sirchas on the reya is a miut hamatzui, and with the Rabbanah, they were mechayivas to be baited. No, I left a message on his machine. Oh. I left a message on Sunday that I have. I didn't realize that was yesterday. Will he be here after the 2:30? Okay, that's why I left a message.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I didn't get.
Or tonight. My obligation tonight was cancelled, so I'm free tonight.
Okay, so
2:30 is good, or maybe tonight. Okay. So the Medrash singles out that you only need bedikas harei. You only have to check the lungs to see that there are no sirchas, and you don't have to check the other 69 possibilities of treifas. The Ramban explains why is that the case, because all the other treifas are a miut she'ein hamotzei, and only sirchas on the lung are considered miut hamotzei. So what percentage is this that the Ramban considers? Whenever it's a miut hamotzei, let's say they'll tell you, the chatnas people will tell you that if you buy such an expensive suit that costs so much and it's made in Italy or made in Poland, so there's a 20% chance that it may have chatnas. 20% of those have chatnas. Or if you eat a certain vegetable, if you eat one fruit or one vegetable, there's a 20% chance that you'll be eating a bug. So what percentage likelihood do you need that should be elevated to the level of a miut hamotzei? What percentage are we talking about? So there's a tshuva sefer, the Mishkan es Yankev, was written by Rabbi Yankele Karliner. He was Rabbi in Karlin. He was a student of Rabbi Chaim Volozhiner. Chaim Volozhiner is the one who founded the Volozhin Yeshiva. So Rabbi Yankele Karliner was in the first group of Talmidim, and he was a very prominent Talmud Chacham, and he would come visit the yeshiva every year and give a shir in Volozhin Yeshiva. So he lived together with the Karlina Hasidim, Stolen Hasidim. Stolen Karlina are twin cities, one next to the other, and you can walk from one to the other. Like we have a lot of times today, you have Bergenfeld and Teaneck. So Stolen Karlina was like Bergenfeld and Teaneck. So many of the tshuvas and the Mishkan is Yankev are to disagree with the practices of the Stolen Hasidim. Okay, so he has one tshuva that has nothing to do with the Hasidim, where he talks about what is considered, what percentage probability do you have to have that it should be considered a miut hamotzei. So he bases himself on a gemara that has really nothing to do with this. He says he thinks it's 10%. So that's what the Darki Tshuva for the Munkacha on Yeridei quotes this in a few places, that the percentage probability to be considered a miyotam matzoi, that you should require bidikim midirabbanim in Atar, you still have the right to go basaroi. If it's 51%, that's a roi. Just made it by the skin of its teeth. The halacha says that's a roi. Midirabbanon, if it's 49% miyot, that's too high. Midirabbanon, anything above 10% and above, you mechuyif to be boidik to check it out. So that's why we are only boidik for stirchas on the lungs, but not boidik for any other treifas. For stirchas on the lungs are more than 10%. So taka, what percentage of all the animals have stirchas on the lungs that make them treifa? So in America, it's something like 14%. Rabbi Soloveitchik used to give hashgacha in a slaughterhouse in Boston many years ago. And he said he used to use all the kulas on the book plus more. He was mekel whenever possible. And he says in his slaughterhouse, they used to have 14% trefus from sirchas on the lungs. Then he used to complain that in the other slaughterhouse, which is supposedly glatt kosher, where they don't use any kulas, they have less than 10%. So he said, how can that be? If I use all the coolers, mine is not glatt kosher. Glatt means that it's smooth, that you didn't have to remove any surface at all. How can it be that if I use all the coolers, they have 14% trefus, and they supposedly not using any coolers at all, they have less than 10%, it's glatt treif. He was complaining that the fake is, it's not glatt kosher at all, it's glatt treif. So in America, it's 14%. So that's what Rav Soloveitchik said, yeah, that's what the Mishkan Es Yankim says, and Amir Tamotze means 10%. Rabbi Yashiv in Eretz Yisrael claims that it's 7% is miyotam motzi. Why? So he says in Eretz Yisrael it happens that when they shech the animals, they keep a record of what percentage of the animals have sirchus on the lungs. In Eretz Yisrael, the percentage is only 7%. And the Ramban makes a statement, you always have to be biting for sirchus on the reya, because it's always a miyotam motzi. So he thinks in Eretz Yisrael also, 7% is considered a miyotam motzi. Good. Well, 2:30 is midnight, so right after midnight. Okay. So Rabbi Yashi thinks that it should be 7% because in Eretz Yisrael the records that they have for many years is that 7% of all the animals have suchas on the lungs. I remember we were once discussing this with Rabbi Neuwirth, the author of the Shmir Shabbos Kol Chosan, so that now he's an old man. But years ago, when he was younger and healthier, he used to travel to South America to supervise the shechita on the meat that used to be imported to Eretz Yisrael. So he says that there in Argentina, they kept records also, what percentage of all the animals had tzirchas on the lungs. Apparently the air is clearer there, so it was only 5%. So he said he doesn't think we have to be machmer. That the Ramban meant to say that the Medrash that's quoted by the Ramban meant to say that all over the world it's a miyotam motzei. So since there's one place in the world in Argentina that only 5% of all the animals have sirchas on their eyes, so that's a proof that 5% is also called miyotam motzei. He said maspik is bad enough. That Rabbi Yashiv was good enough, bad enough. That Rabbi Yashiv was machmer at 7%. Is considered miyotam motzei. He said, not mechuyif to be a machmer for lower than 7%. So, strictly speaking, let's say, if I want to know, am I permitted, do I have to check a suit for shatnas? So, I buy suits for the last 60 years, and I hardly ever find shatnas. 1 out of 25 suits is going to have shatnas. So, 1 out of 25. So it's a meal chain of matzah. So strictly speaking, you're not mechuyif to check for shatnas. You're only mechuyif to check if it's going to be a miyotam matzah. Miyotam matzah means either 10% or above, or 7% and above. If it's less than 7%, then strictly speaking, it's a meal chain of matzah. You're not mechuyif to check. So here the story goes that when they came to the realization that the water in New York is not filtered and it has bugs, so they started to test. What likelihood is there that if you drink a cup of water, you're going to be swallowing a bug? So they ascertained that here in Washington Heights, 1 out of every 8 cups of water is going to have a bug in it. A dead bug. Not unhealthy, but it's going to have a trefa bug that would be visible if it would be alive. It would be swimming around like fish in a fish tank. So 1 out of 8, one out of eight is more than 10%. Yeah. So the pashtus is that would be considered a miyotam motzei. So the question is, the Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Gemara, that not all bugs are treif. There are some bugs that are kosher, even though they're visible, Some bugs are kosher. So that's a question. Maybe these bugs were are such holy bugs that they're kosher. In the 1500s, Rabbi Yosef Karo and most of the Rabbanim, most of the Mekubalim, lived in Tzfat as opposed to Yerushalayim. There was a small group of Talmid Chacham lived in Yerushalayim, but the bigger group of, the bigger Yishuv was in Tzfat. Why was that so? So there was a reason Alpi Nigla and a reason Alpi Nister. So the reason Alpi Nigla was that the water in Yerushalayim was polluted. It was all full of bugs. And strictly speaking, those bugs were kosher. Shulchan Aruch tells you in the end of Siman Pei Dalet, Gemara Chula, and the end of Eilat Treves, that those bugs are kosher bugs, but they, people used to get sick from drinking the water. So that's the real reason. That's the reason Alpi Nigla, why most of the Jews at that time in the 1500s lived in Tzfat, because the water was pure there. Then there was a reason Alpi Kabbalah, why? Because the Gemara says in the end of Maseches Rosh Hashanah, and the Rambam quotes this, that the Bezna HaGadol had a self-imposed exile 40 years before the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. Second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in the year 70, so 40 years earlier, in the year 30, the Sanhedrin left the Lishkas HaGazis, and they were moving around from one location to the other. So the Gemara says, Eser Golias Gols of Sanhedrin, until they disappeared. So the last couple of cities where they were floating around were all in Galil. They were in Tveri and Tzipori and Shfaram and Usha, all located in Galil. And the Gemara says that just like every day, the Bezna Gadol would go home and eat dinner with their families and then go to sleep and then come back, reconvene the next day. So now the Bezna Gadol left for a while and they're going to reconvene. As Moshiach might come, sometime in the future, the Bezna Gadol is going to reconvene in the same location where they last convened. So that was why in the days of Rabbi Yosef Karo, they thought they're going to convene a Sanhedrin in Tzfat. So that's why they started to give smicha. They initiated, Rabbi Yosef Karo got smicha and a couple of others. They started the whole smicha campaign in order to reconvene a Bezin somewhere in the Galil. So they attempted to do it in Tzfat. And what was their interest in reconvening a Sanhedrin? Because there's the Gemara Sanhedrin that says, commenting on the Pasuk in Novi, Hine Anochi, in the end of Malachi, Novi will come the day before Mashiach will appear. Where is he going to come to? So the Gemara says he will appear in front of the Bezna Gadol. So where's the Bezna Gadol going to be? He's going to be reconvening in the last location wherever they were. So the last location was in the Galil. So that's why they were all preparing to be Mekabel Pnei Eliyahu HaNavi. In Yiddish we have an expression, you want to be Mekabel Pnei Mashiach. But the Gemara never had that. The Gemara's expression is to be Mekabel Pnei Eliyahu HaNavi, to make a big Kabbalah spawn of Eliyahu HaNavi. So that's where they were all preparing for the coming of Eliyahu HaNavi, who will announce that tomorrow Mashiach, he'll identify who Mashiach is. So they thought that the Bezna Gadol is going to be reconvening somewhere in the Galil. So that's why they decided to start giving the smicha in Tzfat. The whole plan fell through. It did, nothing came out of it. So some later Rabbanim wrote, because they went to Tzfat, that was not on the list. They should have gone to Tveri. Tveri was the last place. So that's why about 6 years ago, a group of 71 Rabbanim convened in Tveri and they decided that they were with the Bezna Gadol. And they started the Sanhedrin all over again, and they're still functioning a little bit. Okay, the modern day Sanhedrin. They reconvened and they said, but and then they gave themselves smicha also. They got smicha. So that was the reason of the Kabbalah, why the more Jews lived in Tzfat as opposed to Yerushalayim. The reason Alpi Nigla was because the water was polluted in Yerushalayim. And the water was polluted full of bugs. But those bugs were kosher. Shulchan Aruch has in Sif Tezayin, quoting Agi Mar Chulin, that sometimes the bugs are kosher. And the reason Alpi Kabbalah, why they lived in Tzfat, was because they wanted to reconvene a Sanhedrin. That's why they gave the whole smicha. They started the smicha campaign, and they were hoping that if they'll have a Sanhedrin, Eliyahu HaNavi will be able to appear in front of their Sanhedrin and announce the coming of Mashiach the next day.
So, I've mentioned that if you have a cup of water, then it's 1/8 chance. So if you drink, let's say, 4 ounces, that's...
So it's 1/16, so that should be mutter, right? Let's say you have a vegetable that has infestation, but then it depends how many portions I eat. If I'm going to eat 5 portions, so there's five times more chance that I'm going to be eating a bug if I eat a half a portion. So it's a half the percentage chance. So the pashtus is that it all depends. Is there a 10% chance that I'll be violating an aver? Is there a 10% chance that I'll be wearing shatnas? Is there a 10% chance that I'll be eating a bug? And so on and so forth. Is there a 10% chance that this given animal is a trefa? So whatever, there's a 10% or higher, then the midrabbana, we require that you have to check.
And by eating and drinking the shir sirif, it's like we have in other halachos? Like hidei achilas fast for vegetables?
During the course of my whole lifetime, I certainly ate a whole bunch of bugs.
Yeah.
We certainly ate bugs. But it means in each session, when I sit down to eat a meal, so in this session of eating, I don't think it means tok de achilas fast. It means in this meal, is there a 10% chance that I'll be eating a bug?
Even if you have, let's say, 15 minutes between each serving of vegetables, that's also...
I think if it's all part of the same meal, then it's a problem. Let's say you have a vegetable which is so infested that it's considered a meal tamatsui. You have 10% or more chance that by eating a normal portion of this, you'll be swallowing a bug. And then you wash it out, and I know that after washing it four times, a lot of times the bag says, it was washed four times over. If you give it to a lab, they'll be able to find bugs all over, even though it was washed four times over. The OU does it all the time. They buy bags of vegetables and they give it to a lab and they check, and they say they find particles of bugs all over the place. Spinach is very infested in bugs. Other vegetables also. So the question is, what if I have a vegetable that if you eat a normal portion, it's a meal tamot, so it's 10% or more chance that you'll be eating a bug. And then I have a washing process that doesn't remove all the bugs, it just lowers it from 15% to 8% or to 6%. Is that good enough? Or do you say no? Once there's a chavis bedikah mid the rabbanon, once it's a meal tamot, so you muchiv to remove all the bugs. Why should you say like that? Because it's a mishnah bava basra. Let's say I have a fruit and vegetable store. So you come and you want to buy a bushel of apples. So you want to buy 10 pounds of apples. So I give you the 10 pounds. You go home and you find one of the apples was a rotten apple. So the Mishnah says, you can expect that. It's self-understood that there's going to be a rotten apple, there's going to be a spoiled potato, and 10 pounds of potato is going to be a spoiled potato. So the Mishnah gives you what percentage of rotten fruits or vegetables are acceptable that I have no right to go back to the store and tell a guy, I want you to exchange it for me. But the Mishnah says, what happens if I bought 10 pounds of apples and I have half of the apples are rotten? Then the guy's going to say, I'll exchange most of them except for two, I'll leave two rotten apples. Because two rotten apples I can always leave in 10 pounds of apples. So the Mishnah says, nothing doing. That since he sold me an amount of apples or potatoes or cherries, whatever it is, and there was too high a percentage of spoiled ones, then the din is he has to replace everything that's spoiled. So that's what some raise a possibility that maybe this din midrabbanan, whenever you have a meal tamatzui, there's a chavis bedika midrabbanan, and maybe what it means is that you have to check to make sure there are absolutely no bugs whatsoever. So that's a question. You're dealing with a din derabbanan over here. You're not talking about a mekach toys. You're dealing with a din derabbanan over here. In a Torah, you have a right to go basaroi. Midrabbanan, whatever there's a meal tamatzui, you have to be bedim. So it's usually assumed that as long as you have a washing process, that lowers the likelihood from a meal tamatzi to become a meal chenamatzi, even though you know that you probably are going to find bugs there. You certainly will find bugs, but it's a meal chenamatzi, so that's muta. So that's what the bodek chevre does. Bodek doesn't check to make sure that there are no bugs at all, but it just ascertains that it's a meal chenamatzi. So you probably will find bugs. If you look hard enough, you'll find some bugs even in a package that has the approval of the bodek. Doesn't mean that they're saying the bugs are kosher, the bugs are treif. But they're saying that this bag of vegetables is going to only have a meal chain of matzah in it.
You said that you could drink a 4 ounce cup of water because it's 1/16. Can you drink multiple cups can you just keep on filling up a 4 ounce cup because if you finish enough of those, chances are, that will give you a learning threshold.
I would assume that if it's in one session, if it's in one meal, so everything adds up together. That's what he wanted to know. Is it only if it's Turkey de Achilles Pras? I don't think so. I think if it's in one session, in one meal, so everything adds up together. And if it's 10% or more, then Midirabbanan, you're not supposed to eat it. So the Maram Shik has the following tshuva. We started before. he mentions that many people had a practice to filter the water that they want to use on Pesach. A chashash chametz b'Pesach is b'mashu, so maybe there's a mashu of chametz in the water that you can't even see. So the question is, are you permitted to filter the water on Shabbos? Shabbos and Yom Tov. So the Chaya Yodam writes, let's say you have water that's infested with bugs, and the din absolutely requires that you must filter the water. So the Chaya Yodam says, but if the non-Jews who live in the same city don't filter the water, they drink the water the way it is, even though the Jews are required by halacha to filter the water because of the bugs, that's not considered psolus. Psolus is only if it's in common sense terms. If the Nochrim would also consider it inedible and psolus. But if it's only because of halachas, that's not psolus. So the Chayyodim writes like that. Mamshik didn't have the Chayyodim, apparently. Mamshik lived in Hungary, the Chayyodim lived in Vilna. So apparently didn't have a Chayyodim. So he raises the topic and he says, no, if the din requires, if according to the Jewish law, it requires that you have to filter it, so that is called Boria. But if it's only a chumrah, nikar adin, it's not necessary to filter it. So then he says, al pi alocha, you're not doing anything. So you're not doing any brayer, because it isn't really required. So he says, those have a practice that they filter the water for Pesach. So they're allowed to filter the water on Shabbos, on Pesach, and on Yom Tov, on Pesach. The whole thing is only a chumrah. Nikar adin, they're not doing anything, so there's no problem of brayer. If you live in a community, he says, every body of water in the world has the kopa pot. So he says, if you live in a community, which is a mir she'eino matsui, which it is rough places, so strictly speaking, you're not mukhiyev to be to filter the water. So you want to filter the water, because then, hey, you're permitted to filter on Shabbos Yom Tov, it's only a chumer. But he writes to the Shoel, if you tell me that you live in a community where it's a mil tamotzoi, that it's 10% or more likelihood, one out of every 10 cups is going to have a bug in it. So then he says, yimukhiyev medina midirabbanan, yimukhiyev to filter the water. So then he thinks that filtering the water on Shabbos would be a violation of Boria. Here in New York, it's questionable. Some Rabbanim claim that these bugs are mutav. These are kosher bugs, based on the Simen Pei Dalet, Siftei Zayin, and Shulchanah, based on the Gemara Chulin. Not sure exactly why they think that this is the same, but that's what some prominent Rabbanim think, that these bugs are mutav. And then the Chayyodim thinks that even if the bugs are aser, it's not a violation of Boria because the Goyim drink the water the way it is. In common sense terms, you're not taking out any psolas. It's just al pi halacha, you have to take it out. So there are tzdodim lahakal over here. And then, especially if you have, many people have a filter on their faucet, that whenever they turn on the faucet, even they just want to wash their face, or they want to wash the dishes, so all the water is being filtered. Sometimes you have a filter, you have to turn it on. Each time you want to filter the water, you have to turn it on, turn it off, turn it on, turn it off. So then when you turn on the filter, so then you're doing an act of borer. But if you have the filter is attached to the system, whenever you turn on the water, all the water is being filtered. So that's an argument. Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa quotes this from the Minchas Yitzchak. Minchas Yitzchak was in Manchester, and then he was the Goyen Ab Bezdin of the Eid Acharedis till the last few years of his life. He wrote many volumes of Chubas. So one of his Chubas, he writes like that. If all the water, when you turn on the water, you're not doing a specific act of filtering the water. You're turning on the water, and the filter is in the system. All the water is being filtered, even if you're not interested in filtering the water. So then he raises a possibility that maybe that's not a violation of Boria. So here in New York, if you have such a system that you have, the filter is attached to the sink, you don't have to attach to the faucet, you don't have to screw it on separately. So the pashta says that you have these three tzadim lahakel, that it could be that these bugs are mutter. And we're not so sure that it's a miyot hamotzi also. It's questionable. Because in certain places in New York, in the daytime it's a miyot shein hamotzi, in the nighttime it's a miyot hamotzi. It depends how many people, it depends whether the people around the corner are using their faucets or not. It depends how many people are taking showers at that time. So it's really hard to declare that that's a miyot hamotzi. If it changes this different times of the day, different days of the week, it changes. So that's questionable whether that's called a miyot hamotzi. And the Chayyodim holds that it's not borer at all. And if it's attached to the system, so you're not doing a specific act of prayer, just turning on the water, so you have all these sports dotum lahakal, so there's room to be makel on that.
So I'm still slightly confused. How is filtering, like a Brita filter, how is that like borer? Like, so using a Brita filter on Shabbos is borer. So how is the act of filtering?
No, a Brita, in New York, people drink the water the way it is. So to use a Brita filter to make it even purer is not a violation of Boria. The only question is, what if the halacha requires that you have to filter it because of bugs? So then the Chayyadim says still, the non-Jews drink the water the way it is, so there's no barrier. And the Maram Shik thinks not so. The Maram Shik thinks that if the halacha requires that you have to filter it, then those bugs are considered tzolas, and then it is a violation of barrier. So that's the question. Are you allowed? Do you assume that the water in New York City has a miyuta matsui of bugs or not? The whole thing is questionable, whether it's a miyuta matsui or not, whether the bugs are us or not. Then the Gemara has a din also quoted here in Shulchan Aruch, bugs in the fish. So the Gemara says if a fish swallows a bug from outside, so just because it entered into the stomach of the fish, it doesn't make it kosher. The bug was treif before it came into the stomach and remains treif. But what happens? I catch a fish and I find that the flesh of the fish itself turned into a bug. So the Gemara says that that's okay. So the simple reading of the Gemara, there's a sefer called Dor Revi, the fourth generation. The author of the sefer was the fourth generation after the Chassam Sofer. He was the first great-grandson who was named after the Chassam Sofer. His name was Rabbi Moshe Glasner. I think he was a rabbi in Mattersdorf or something in Hungary. He was a big Zionist, and they were all angry at him, because most of the Hungarian rabbis were anti-Zionist, and he left Eretz Yisrael way before HaKamas HaMedina. He didn't live so long to see HaKamas HaMedina. It was way before in the 1800s, I think. So he has a very modern approach to learning Gemara. Everything is very interesting by him. And the Hakdamah to his Sefer on Chulin has a few volumes. So he has one Sefer on Chulin called Dor Revi. And the Hakdamah to that Sefer is really an introduction to all of Torah Shabbat. Then he has a lot of interesting, fascinating ideas. You have to think about what he has to say. You don't have to agree with everything that he says, but it's worth pondering. So he writes that obviously the Chachmei HaGemara believed in spontaneous generation. The Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos that one of the 39 malachas is Nitilas Neshama, if you take the life of an animal. But a harikina b'Shabbos, if you kill a lice on Shabbos, that's permissible because they're spontaneously generated. That's the simple translation of the Gemara. It's only considered a living animal if it's v'lad shenolad mevlad shenolad mevlad. When the Rabbanu Shalom created the sheshes mebreshes balichayim and they have ladders, so that's considered life. But if the thing, if you have rotten fruits and rotten vegetables or rotten meat, and the rotten meat turns into a bug or a worm, so that's not considered a worm. That's not considered life, and there's no prohibition of Netilas Neshama. So that's the Gemara Masechet Shabbos. Harikina b'Shabbos is not in violation of Netilas Neshama because it's spontaneously generated. And this Gemara Chulin, in the middle of towards the end of Perek Elu Treifus, quoted here in Shulchan Aruch, and Simin Pei Dalet Sif Tezayin, sounds like it's saying the same thing, that the fish, the worms that are found in the fish are mutter, because the worms develop in the fish. So that's the Shaila. What do we do now that Louis Pasteur proved that there is no such thing as spontaneous generation? So what do you do with these two dinim in the Gemara? So some Rabbanim say we should throw out the two dinim. It's wrong. The din is wrong. It's based on an inaccurate fact. So you cannot accept that din. I think the first encyclopedia of halacha that was printed was the Pachad Yitzchok, Rabbi Yitzchok Lamprenti. He lived in Italy. I just visited Italy this summer, so when we came to one city, there were two brothers who were descendants of his. Their name is Lamprenti. And they gave our whole, we went with a whole group of tourists, so they gave the whole group Chazonim's concert. They were singing their piyutim, that we didn't even know what they were talking about. We don't say those piyutim. They were singing their piyutim to Danny Gunin for an hour, to these two brothers. So the name Lamprenti is respected in Italy, because they are descendants of this Rav Yitzchak Lamprenti. He published an encyclopedia. He didn't publish the whole thing. Much of it was printed after he died. It's quite a few volumes called Pachad Yitzchak. People think Rabbi Hutner was the first one. The Pachad Yitzchak is a famous encyclopedia of halacha. Encyclopedia Talmudit. That was the first encyclopedia Talmudit. Is the Pachad Yitzchak. So he writes that the Rabbanim in Italy had this big machlekes. How should you deal with the din of the Gemara? He talks about a hurricane of the Shabbos. How should you deal with that din? So they assume that the din is the same, and they assume the Gemara should be reinterpreted. Either the Chachmei HaGemara had a tradition that it's mutter to kill a kina, and the reason that they gave is inaccurate, there must be some other reason, or you should reinterpret the reason that it means that it's a different type of reproductive system. So they still accept that din. So in recent years, they have a discussion about this Gemara, about the worms and the fish. So in the introduction to the Sefer Doravi on Maseches Chulin, he writes, the Chachma Gemara clearly believed in spontaneous generation. If they would have lived in our generation, they would never have said that the Horikina B'Shabbos is Mutta, they would never have said that the worms and the fish are Mutta. But at the time that they were formulating the Dinim, they thought that there is such thing as spontaneous generation. So that's why they said this dinim, and even though the din is now ascertained to be an error, so he thinks that the din is still binding because at the time that they developed the din, it was not considered an error. That was considered the going shita. In fact, the Rambam writes, the Rambam interprets a Gemara, that any bug that's spontaneously generated has a separate law. So the Rambam has a whole attack in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, and he says, and anybody who doesn't believe in spontaneous generation doesn't know the ABC of science. Everybody, all the scientists in the world know that there is such a thing as spontaneous generation. Yeah, that was the issue. After Louis Pasteur proved there's no such thing as spontaneous generation, so the Rabbanim were at a loss. What are we going to do? The Rambam and the Gemaras, what are we going to do? So when communism came on the scene, communists, Bishita, are atheists. They don't believe in God. So if you don't believe in God, there has to be spontaneous generation. If you believe in God, so God created life. But if you don't believe in God, so there has to be spontaneous generation. It means life came by itself. Life happened by itself. So the communists commissioned their scientists to disprove Louis Pasteur. So for money, you can do anything. So they were paid to prove that Louis Pasteur was wrong. So they proved that there is spontaneous generation. So many Rabbanim were dancing from joy. They finally saved the Rambam and the Gemara. So I remember I took chemistry here in the college with Professor Soloveitchik. That was Rabbi Soloveitchik's brother, Shmuel Soloveitchik. So he said, what a joke. They're dancing from joy that the atheists who don't believe in God, so they had to prove that there is such a thing as spontaneous generation. The whole thing was a fake because of their Apikursas. So they're happy about the fact that the Apikursan proved that you can't have spontaneous generation. We don't accept anything, the communists. So that's the question, what do you do with this din in the Gemara? So they quoted the name of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. He thought that maybe you should reinterpret the Gemara. What the Gemara meant to say was like this, not that the worms that develop in the fish from the flesh of the fish are spontaneously generated. We don't believe in spontaneous generation. Maybe what the Gemara meant to say is like this, that the eggs of these worms were microscopic when they entered into the fish. So whatever is microscopic doesn't count, and they only developed into visible worms in the flesh of the fish. And that's what the Gemara meant to say, that the worms develop from the fish means they only become visible once they're in the flesh of the fish. That was the suggestion of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, how to interpret the Gemara. If that's the interpretation, then you're going to have to ask a lot of worms in the fish, because we have ascertained now, the scientists know that there are a lot of worms in the fish that come from outside. They were visible before the fish, before the fish swallowed them. But the worms are found in the flesh of the fish. So according to what they quoted from Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach from many years ago, so you would have to ask for these worms. So you look in the Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't appear like that. Shulchan Aruch doesn't seem to assume like that. Shulchan Aruch seems to understand that if you find the worms in the stomach of the Gemara says, find the worms in the stomach, the worms are rasa. If you find the worms in the flesh of the fish, then it's mutter. So why is that? Because only the worms that are found in the flesh became visible in the flesh, and they were microscopic before. So it's Shulchan Aruch wrong. If you find the worms in the stomach, the Beis Yosef quotes Rishonim that it's a suffix, whether it's rasa or mutter. Why is it a suffix? Obviously it didn't develop in the flesh of the fish. It came from outside. So the answer is, maybe these worms are those types that they would penetrate through the lining of the stomach, they would be able to go into the flesh of the fish. So those worms that would go into the flesh, even if they go back out of the flesh and they go back into the stomach, those will be mutter. The worms that can't penetrate the lining of the stomach and they'll never get into the flesh, so those are the worms that are rust. So if you find worms in the stomach of the fish, you have to throw them out. Maybe they're rust and maybe they're mutter. So Mars seems to say it's a different word. that any worm that's found, that the worm came from outside, but it goes into the stomach and then it penetrates through the, it makes a hole, makes a tunnel, and then it goes into the flesh of the fish, so it blends in to become part of the fish. That's the reason why it's muta. It's not muta because the fish turned into worms. The fairish, not. I found the worm in the stomach. The flesh, there is no flesh over there. It's a stomach. It's all the junk that the fish swallowed. The worm existed as a worm before. But since this worm could be such, the nature of this worm may be such that it could tunnel through into the flesh and blend in to be part of the flesh, and then we would have been mata such a worm, we didn't even find it in the stomach. So all the worms in the stomach are rasa misafik, because you can't tell whether it would penetrate through or not. So the pashta seems to be a different word, so strange. That's what the Chachmei HaGemara said, the Amaroim came up with such a din, that the worms in the fish are considered blending in with the flesh of the fish, and it doesn't have a prohibition of worms. Years ago, the Hisachta Sarabanan proclaimed the prohibition against eating fish that were caught in the Great Lakes in America because they're full of worms. And they said, the Gemara says, whenever the worms come from outside, whenever the worm develops in the fish, is muta. Whenever the worm comes from outside, then it's also. They said all the worms come from outside. But the scientists say that there is no such thing as a worm that develops in the flesh of the fish. So they said, no, that's apikursis. But the scientists say that's against the Gemara. The Gemara says there is such a thing as worms that develop in the fish. So that we don't accept from them. But we only accept from the scientists their biru that the worms that are found in the flesh of this fish, that these came from outside. Truth and not, we know all the worms always come from outside. The flesh of the fish never turns into worms. That's what the author of the Dora V writes. It's a double portion like that. All the worms come from outside. And nonetheless, the Gemara had a tradition. The Gemara says that these worms are muta. Whenever it's part of the flesh of the fish, the halacha says that it's muta. In Shulchan Aruch, they talk about worms in an apple. If the worm developed in the apple, it means that there was a microscopic egg that somehow found itself inside the apple. Then it developed inside the apple into a worm. So strictly speaking, that worm is muta. Unless the worm is going to crawl on the outside of the apple, then it becomes us. Because when it's inside, then it's muta. So how do you know? How do you know? Maybe it was a worm before it crawled in. It's a complicated thing. So the mice are not supposed to eat any of these worms. In the Shulchan Aruch, they quoted Chuvas HaRashba, who has the following kula. Let's say I have water, and I know that it's a miut hamatzui, it's more than a 10% chance that if I'll take a little water, it probably will have a bug in it. So the din is you're obligated midirabbanan to filter this water. So what if you didn't filter the water, and what if you cooked some vegetable soup? So you're not allowed to eat the whole soup because there may be a worm, and you can't see it. So why don't you just say the worm is bottled? The worm should be bottled b'shishma. If you can't identify, there's something. So the answer is because it's not bitl if it's a berry of shlema. If it's a whole animal that's intact, then there isn't any bitl. So the Rashba says, what happens if you pour in some water which you should have checked? Because it's a miut hamatzah, it's a 10% chance that it's going to have a bug in it. I put it in, and then I'm cooking with vegetables, and I'm stirring a little bit. And when you stir and you cook with vegetables, so there is a chance, there is a 50-50 chance that whatever bug that may be there may have been crushed. So once the bug is crushed or broken into smaller particles, then it no longer has a din of barrier. This din that a barrier is libitable is only if the whole barrier is intact. But if one wing was knocked off and one tiny leg was knocked off, it no longer has the din of a barrier. So that's what the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Chuvas HaRashba. If you, let's say, I take a kettle of water and I cook a kettle of water on top of the fire. So the fact that I cooked a kettle of water does not raise a possibility that maybe the bugs got broken up. Maybe the bugs got... If you cook a kettle of water, it's the same as it was before. Nothing changes. Only if you cook water in soup with other particles and you stir it a little bit, so then the Rashba said, that's the fact. Then the Rashba says, and it corresponds to reality, that there is a chance, there's a 50-50 chance that maybe the bug got chopped up. So that's what the Rashba says. If they made such soup, so then the soup would be mutami tam svek sveke. Maybe your bowl of soup doesn't have a bug at all. Who says that you're the lucky winner, that yours is going to be one of the eight bowls, one of the nine bowls that's going to have a bug. And Rafi then tips Lama that it did have a bug. Maybe the bug was broken up when they were stirring it, when they were cooking it with all the particles in it, in which case it's going to be bottle because it's no longer a berry. And Mitam Svek Sveka, the Shulchan Aruch says that it would be mutter. But L'chatchila, it's not permissible to create a Svek Sveka. That's two opinions in Taisvis. The Nadi Behud has a tshuva where he quotes a Taisvis in Zvachim, of all places. Is it permissible L'chatchila to create a Svek Sveka that you'll be able to rely on? If you happen to be in a situation where there's a Svek Sveka L'kula, the Gemara says it's mutter. But is a mutter litza L'chatchila Svek Sveka B'yadai? So we usually assume that that's not right. We're talking B'diyevah. If a person already cooked the soup with the water that they were required to filter and they didn't filter it, so then you can be mekel to drink the soup based on this Svek Sveka.
Also, are you allowed to intentionally break up a whole unit because you know that it's not Betul B'Shishim, break it up so that it becomes Betul B'Shishim?
Not permitted. That's the Mishnah. That's the example the Mishnah has. Eim Avatan Yisrael L'chatchila. If you have something that's a Dova Choshev that's not bottled, so you'll chop everything up, so no longer will retain its Chashiv, so it will be bottled. So that's a violation of Eim Avatlan Yisrael Chatchila. Not only is it a violation of Eim Avatlan if I throw in the treifas into the kosher, here the treif and the kosher are mixed in already. I didn't mix it in. But everything is a Dova Choshev, so I'm going to chop all the nuts up, I'm going to chop up all the pieces, so the treifa thing will probably get chopped up. So that's also a violation of Eim Avatlan Yisrael Chatchila.
So if you filter the soup after that, like, is it about the whole soup, or if you filter out the bug out after that, even though it's already been in the soup, then it's okay.
That's okay. As long as you remove the bug, it's okay. The shaila is that it gives nesinas tam. So a tiny little bug in a big pot of soup.
Does little not apply if you can easily not make it little?
If you can easily filter, yeah, if you can easily remove the treifas, then you have to. Shulchan Aruch says, let's say treifas shmalz fell into vegetable soup, and you have shishim against it. But if you'll put the vegetable soup in the refrigerator, the schmaltz will float to the top. It'll all rise to the top. So in Shulchan Aruch, you have to do that. Whenever you know that there's a method, there's a way, without using major chemical procedures, simple, balabatim, no, you put it in the refrigerator, or you put it in a cold place, so the schmaltz will rise to the top. So whatever treifas you can remove, you don't apply bittul to that. That is correct. Yeah.
But didn't we say that the turning of the water, force of the water going through the pipes will destroy the bug?
Will kill the bug.
Oh, will kill it,
won't kills the bug. No, it doesn't necessarily break it apart. No, a lot of times these bugs are intact. But when you cook it together with the vegetables, a whole bunch of other particles, and you're stirring it in the pot, so that there is a chance that if you just cook the water in a kettle, it will not be. Let's say if you have a samovar, every samovar has a filter. So whatever water you put through a samovar will be filtered at the end. That won't be a problem. Okay, the Jewish people are known for their... we have a different body. The non-Jews eat bugs and it doesn't affect them negatively. But a Jewish body is different. So the Jews have to be careful not to eat bugs. Very good. Okay.